Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. And here at a minute before 10 o'clock, it's already 87 degrees in New York City, according to my friendly neighborhood weather app, going up to 95 by this afternoon in Manhattan, even hotter inland. 97 is the projected high for Newark, according to the Weather Channel app. The Real Feel Heat Index for New York City is expected to hit around 102 today, and it's supposed to be like this, even worse, in fact, through the weekend. Luckily, we are not London, where their triple-digit hottest temperatures ever have led to multiple major fires around the city and stretches of tarmac at the airport literally melting, according to news reports, in addition to more than 1,000 people dying around Western Europe. But it is still hot enough here to be dangerous, especially for seniors who do not have air conditioning. Subway platforms are also expected to become scorching places to be at many stations. New York City has opened cooling centers in all five boroughs and extended hours at city pools. It's good to stay hydrated and take breaks from the sun in the shade if you're outside and you're able. Keep your pets cool and hydrated, too. With us first today for a few minutes is Christina Farrell, First Deputy Commissioner of the New York City Office of Emergency Management. Commissioner Farrell, thanks for coming on to talk to everyone. Welcome to WNYC.
Thank you. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So for many people, okay, it's 90-plus degrees in July. That's just summer. But for others in certain age and health and income demographics, this could be dangerous or deadly. Who's at the highest risk today?
Yeah, no, definitely. As you mentioned, you know, vulnerable New Yorkers, the very young, older New Yorkers, those with pre-existing conditions, you know, the heat can hit them differently. And, you know, heat is something that can kind of sneak up on you. So by the time that, you know, you start to feel effects, it may be kind of late. So, you know, it's definitely better if people, you know that they're at risk, or they know that family members or their neighbors, you know, are at additional risk, that they're older. It would be great for people to check in on them. As you mentioned, the city has opened cooling centers. We have over 550 open today across the city. People can call 311 or go to nyc.gov/beat the heat. And they can find a cooling center close to them and the hours and other details.
Yeah, and I see the cooling centers aren't necessarily special spaces for this in many cases. They're common places in people's neighborhoods that they know. Many public libraries, for example, and senior centers that already exist as senior centers. We have tweeted out, and listeners, if you want to go to this, obviously you can. We have tweeted out the city's cooling centers map and public pools map. But, Commissioner, for those listeners not online, including some of our seniors who maybe don't use the web that much, where's the first place to look in your neighborhood if you're looking for a cooling center?
Yeah, no, for sure. Before anyone goes anywhere, even if they are used to going to their library or going to their senior center, if you don't have access to social media or to the web, I would call 311. If you give your address, they can double check. Just because the, you know, with 550 different locations, there can be changes in hours. You know, sometimes if the air conditioning is not functioning properly temporarily in their building, or maybe they're doing a little construction or something, you know, the last thing we want is for people to venture out in the heat and then go to some place that they think is open, and for whatever reason, it might not be open. But, you know, like you said, the most common, we have terrific partners around the city. The three public library systems, they make all of their spaces available. Senior centers for people over 60. There are Salvation Army centers, park centers, public housing, so many different spots. And it's also just important to note that, like you said, there's you know, this is not like a hurricane shelter or something. It's just most important that people stay cool. So if somebody, you know, malls are great spaces, right? If someone has one of those or other shops, you know, a place where people get coffee if they can be there for a little extra. So the cooling centers are designated spaces that the city puts on this map. But, you know, really any space that is cool where people can escape the hottest part of the day is the best place to be.
Yeah. In fact, I saw a Petco pet store in Little Neck listed as a pet friendly cooling center on the city's map. Are there many of those around the city designated as pet friendly or other places that are stores, not just public sector buildings?
Yeah. So right now, thank you for bringing that up. Last year, through a partnership with Petco, you know, because that's a question we've gotten. We know that pets are part of people's family. And, you know, people may make the decision not to leave their house or apartment, even if it's really hot, if they can't take their pet with them. And we understand that. So we were able to work with Petco. We really thank them. They have 16 locations in the city that, like you said, they're designated on the map. That are recognized as cooling centers where people can bring their pets. And we've actually gotten feedback that a fair amount of people have been using them. We are talking to other, similar stores that would also be willing to be put on the map. But, you know, people should avail themselves. And, it's a great resource for pet owners.
Seniors are also at the highest risk if they get COVID-19. Are there any kinds of COVID precautions that you're taking at the city-run cooling centers this year?
Yeah, we are. So we know that COVID is still active, and we see with the variants, you know, the numbers going up and down over time. So senior centers, they are only available for people that are seeking a cool space for those 60 and older. So in the past, before COVID, when we activated the cooling centers, if younger New Yorkers that felt at risk wanted to enter a senior center, they could because of the COVID considerations that you have laid out. Right now, if you're under 60 and you want to hit a cooling center, I would focus on libraries or other locations. Also, we work with all our partners. So in addition to multilingual signage, all these centers have masks, they have hand sanitizer, you know, other things available. And, it's important to note that when people go to these centers, they will need to follow every location may have different policies. If there are mask mandates or other things at place in certain locations, people need to follow whatever those mandates are for each individual center.
If you're a younger companion of a senior, you can go into the senior center, right?
Most of the senior centers, the people that go there are well known, they work with their populations. So, I think they have those kind of things worked out. But yeah, I mean, you know, it is great when younger New Yorkers, if they're helping the seniors to stay cool.
I guess it's like the opposite of the sign that I've seen in some New York City playgrounds that say, "No adult admitted unless accompanied by a child." Huh. So, what about?
Although I will say there's a lot of, we've also put a lot of cooling implements in the parks. So there are sprinklers, there are misting stations. So that's also a good option, for people if they are outdoors and if they want to cool down, they can. There's a New York City Cool It map, which lists the different outdoor implements that are in place.
What are you allowed to say officially, and what would you say off the record if you were allowed about fire hydrants? I certainly see some of them opened in my Upper Manhattan neighborhood on days like this.
So there is a program where people can go, and I believe it's anyone over 18. If they go to their local firehouse, there are spray caps that could be put on the fire hydrants, so they can't be made into sprinklers, but it does it properly and without losing water pressure, which is obviously the most important because it's great for people to stay cool. But if people take it into their own hands and it affects the water pressure in a neighborhood, there could obviously be very bad impacts if there were a fire. But if people go to their local firehouse or again, call 311 or go on Beat the Heat, it'll tell people how they can get spray caps to safely use fire hydrants to stay cool.
And what about the city pools? The story earlier in the summer was curtailing some pool hours or some locations because of the lifeguard shortage. Now I see pool hours are being extended into the evening. I think it's 8:00 tonight. Is that right? What's the latest?
It is. So, the Parks Department, City Hall, other city agencies, I know that they have been you know, working to recruit and, you know, other incentives for lifeguards. You know, we're really thankful to the Parks Department because today and tomorrow, which right now are forecast to be the hottest days, they were able to, you know, get proper staffing and extend pool hours till 8 o'clock. So people can go to their pools and enjoy the, that's obvious. That's one of my favorite ways to stay cool. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they can enjoy that for some extra time in the evenings, which is great.
Is that weather forecast you just gave us the latest information you have that today and tomorrow are expected to be the worst days? That would actually be relatively good news, I think, because I had earlier seen forecasts saying this was only going to get gradually worse through the weekend, with Saturday and Sunday being the hottest days.
So right now, I mean, hot is hot, right? When you're over 95, you know, you feel the effects. Right now, I believe that what I saw earlier from the Weather Service was a potential heat index, which is, you know, what it feels like outside, of 98 today and up to 100 or 101 tomorrow. I think Friday right now, and again, the forecast, as we know, constantly evolves. I think Friday may be a little cooler, but still within a very hot forecast. And then the weekend is shaping up to still be over 95. So I would say, you know, for the next several days, it's going to continue to be very steamy and uncomfortable.
Yeah. Now, the New York State DEC, Department of Environmental Conservation at the state level, has a webpage about the effects of global warming in the state, including average temperatures. Folks, listen to some of these stats. Average temperatures are already 2.5 degrees warmer in recent years than they were in 1970, according to the state. That's a big increase in a relatively short amount of time. Sea levels are a full foot higher than in 1900. It says sea level rise is already locked in by existing greenhouse gases to be another 18 to 75 inches by the end of this century on New York's shorelines. And it says heat waves can cause heat-related illnesses, heat stroke, and other serious health problems. Heat waves can also make it more likely that people who already have heart, lung, or other chronic conditions might get sick. So, Commissioner, this is kind of a global warming question in relation to the heat. In your 20 or so years in emergency management in the city, have you been seeing more heat-related deaths or illnesses over these last few decades as global warming has increased?
That is probably best asked to the health department as they, you know, keep those numbers and things. I mean, we know obviously that the planet everywhere is getting hotter. Like you said, there's an island effect. There are very, you know, an urban heat effect in the city. And so we have learned more over time about the effects. And sometimes, you know, when people end up, you know, having these effects and everything, it's not clear till after the fact that was in effect the cause of death. But the city, you know, is taking global warming very seriously, as is the state. And, you know, looking at different things, one thing that was implemented, you know, while we were in the midst of COVID was looking at, you know, the heat vulnerability index, which was put in place, which was neighborhoods that may be hotter, may have less resources to cooling centers and to other things in more vulnerable populations, you know, that may hit different, you know, New Yorkers of color or other populations disparately. And so that is, you know, in large part why we have increased the number of cooling centers, focusing on neighborhoods that have a high heat vulnerability index, that may have limited transportation or other options, you know, to try to really do what we can to get people the resources we need and, you know, keep them safe.
Yeah. So that was the last question I was going to ask you. I think you might have just answered it. But I'm going to ask it anyway, just to make the point, which is about how you're set up to deal with heat inequality, which is a very real thing. For example, the New York Times had an article about this in May. One of the contrasts it gave was that in Crotona Park East in the Bronx, 41% of residents fall below the federal poverty line. 24% of households there lack air conditioning, and few have cars to reach beaches or forests. By contrast, in Carnegie Hill on the Upper East Side, one of the city's wealthiest, whitest sections, it says 96% of households are air conditioned, and so many residents have money and flexibility to flee the city that during the hottest weeks last summer, some streets felt empty. That from the New York Times on May 28th. So just give us one more thought on the city's role in fighting heat wave inequities like that, and if there's anything new from the Adams administration on that front for this year.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like I said, that is something that, you know, and that has covered from the last mayoral administration to this one. You know, the last couple of years, the number of cooling centers was greatly reduced due to places being closed and, you know, the strong COVID considerations. The fact that we're up over 550 cooling centers, you know, is really terrific. And again, we're focusing on neighborhoods, like you mentioned in the Bronx, that, you know, need access to additional resources. You know, we work with elected officials. We thank our partners in the media for, you know, highlighting this, you know, talking to nonprofit organizations and our volunteer groups, really to get the message out, you know, that even a couple hours outside of the heat, especially if you're, you know, in a really hot building, is, you know, can make the difference for people. So, you know, we know that there's always more work to be done. As we noted, this is a long duration event. We haven't even touched on, you know, potential power outages and what we can do to stay safe there. But, you know, this is something very important. As you may know, 2 years ago, at the height of COVID, emergency management and others were able to install 74,000 air conditioners to vulnerable seniors around the city. And also there is the HEAP. It's the HEAP program. I don't remember what the acronym is. It's like Heat Energy Assistance Program or something. But through HRA and other city agencies, they work to install air conditioners and to also give vulnerable New Yorkers some assistance on their heat bills, because sometimes people have air conditioners, but as we know, energy rates have been, the cost of energy has been increasing, and so people may not run their air conditioners. And so, you know, there are programs available through the city and the state to help people cover those bills and to access air conditioners if they don't have one.
You know, just to follow up before you go on something that you said that I didn't even think of before you said it, but I should have, is are you at the Office of Emergency Management in contact with Con Ed or any other power supplier, but especially Con Ed, because we know there have been some blackouts at this time of year in the city's history on really hot days.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Con Ed is, you know, one of our really strong, you know, non-city partners. We talk to them constantly. They are, you know, they have opened up their engineering room and other things to deal with the heat, and we send staff there, so they are 24/7. In the mix. And, you know, we are definitely talking to them all the time, looking at any conservation methods that can be put in place. The same with National Grid and the other suppliers. And, you know, if we do, you know, it's still early days in this heat wave, as we said, there, you know, the effects on the grid can be cumulative. But so far, you know, things have been holding up well. And if we start to see some, you know, challenges, we will work. And, you know, we also, you know, part of the message is to ask New Yorkers to do their part, you know, to not run heavy appliances, dishwashers, washers, dryers in the hottest part of the day. I know, you know, people like to have their apartments really frosty sometimes, but, you know, trying to increase it just a couple degrees so you're still comfortable, but you don't have to wear a sweatshirt maybe inside your house to take a little heat off the grid. For sure, we're in touch with Con Ed and the other suppliers.
Yeah, that's a great point about personal responsibility with respect to the air conditioning. And as you say, I guess the threat increases of power outages as this goes on. One of the unusual things about this heat wave is the number of days over 90 degrees that are being forecast. Has Con Ed expressed any confidence level one way or the other that they'll still be okay on Friday, on Saturday, on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, like I said, that, you know, heat waves, fortunately, you can see them coming. You know, they can bring in extra crews, they can extend hours, and there are a lot of demand reduction programs. You may have seen that the mayor and the citywide administrative services commissioner this morning, the city, we're obviously a large landlord. We have a lot of buildings in the city. And so right now, our building for emergency management, we're part of the demand response program. So we are increasing the thermostat and, you know, taking out air conditioning from like stairwells or, you know, conference rooms, areas where we may not need it. But I think upwards of 90 city buildings, some libraries, the fire academy, some other locations have been added to that to try to, you know, help do our part on the grid. And I know our private sector partners, they are also part of demand response programs. And personal, you know, individual Con Ed customers can also be part of that where you voluntarily, they are, you know, you agree to let them decrease the power coming into your house a little bit, and you see the difference on your bill. So that is another area where the city, the private sector, and individual New Yorkers can participate.
Christina Farrell, First Deputy Commissioner of the New York City Office of Emergency Management. Thanks for giving us some time today. I know on what I know is a very busy day for you because of the heat. Thanks very much.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. More in a minute. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. With us now, Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine, formerly chairman of the City Council's Health Committee before his election as Borough President last November. He's got more for us on protecting yourself and your loved ones in an extended heat wave like this. He's also got suggestions for getting more monkeypox vaccines to more people and more equitably, while New York City remains the epicenter of that. We'll touch on other issues, too. Mark Levine is also the only New York Democrat other than Bill de Blasio not running in the 10th Congressional District primary. Just kidding. Hi, Borough President. Welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning, Brian. And also, you can't redistrict the island of Manhattan, so I have that going for me as well.
Yes, Manhattan is Manhattan, so the Borough President District is what it is. Let's pick up right where we left off with the Emergency Management Deputy Commissioner. Is heat, risk, inequity something you're dealing with as Borough President?
Absolutely, Brian. And boy, this has been a tough stretch. You know, we're in another COVID wave. We had monkeypox. We had terrible flooding on Monday in uptown Manhattan and the Bronx. So this is a lot. And yes, now we have a heat wave. It is a public health matter. We have over 100 heat exacerbated deaths in New York City every year. That number is increasing. And there's enormous inequality. The health department has run the data, and African-American New Yorkers are more than twice as likely to die from heat-related causes as white New Yorkers. So there's enormous inequality. And if you map the neighborhoods where there's high heat vulnerability, it is uptown Manhattan, in particular East Harlem. It's the South Bronx, it's Central Brooklyn, and it's Southeast Queens. There again, inequality. By the way, Brian, almost every single case of someone dying at home from a heat-related cause is in a home without an air conditioner. So this just reminds the public of how important it is for people who are medically vulnerable to find a way to stay cool.
Boy, it's such a long-term challenge, too. And I don't want to get too far away from the immediate challenge of the heat and helping people get through it. But yeah, get everybody air conditioners. And then at the same time, we say, hey, we have to fight global warming and reduce our dependence on things like air conditioners.
Well, we have a two-front war here. We have to accelerate our move to carbon neutrality to slow climate change, but we have to deal with the climate change and extreme weather that is already here. And we focused probably more on flooding events, especially on the coastline, but rising heat waves is also a factor here, and we have to prepare for it. We're not doing enough, by the way, to get people air conditioners who need it, low-income families who need it. There is a program funded by the state, the Home Energy Assistance Program, that will pay up to $800 for you to get an air conditioner, but it's limited, and they it's first come, first serve, and then they run out of money, and the program closed on July 8th. Huh. So we need to fund that better to give people who need it access to air conditioners.
And listeners, we can take phone calls for Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine on the heat, on monkeypox, on other things that might be relevant to his job as borough president. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And that, of course, can include citywide issues. You don't have to be in Manhattan to call in and talk to Mark Levine. Citywide issues, region-wide issues, but if they're relevant to his work, 212-433-9692, or tweet at Brian Lehrer. And Borough President, we'll talk later in the show about trees in New York City specifically as a source of protection from heat and other threats, a separate segment on trees in that context coming up. But what can you do as Borough President about these longer-term weather and climate inequities, like so many untreed streets in the poorest neighborhoods, as if it was designed that way? And what do you have to rely on the higher levels of government for, the city, the state, the federal government, that you can't change as borough president?
Well, I'm really glad you're focusing on trees, Brian, because trees cool neighborhoods by some estimates as much as 20 degrees in the midst of a heat wave. Hmm. And there's enormous inequality in where trees are planted. East Harlem, as an example, has far fewer trees than, say, the Upper West Side. And so it makes the neighborhood hotter on a day like today. And I have joined, as you have covered, with my four colleagues, all five of the borough presidents in New York City, to call for the planting of 1 million more trees on streets, focusing on neighborhoods which have too little tree canopy, but also looking at adding trees in parks and natural areas and places like NYCHA campuses, rooftops, et cetera, to add cooling benefits, resiliency benefits, cleaning the air. This is, I think, got to be one of the most important resiliency projects of the city. Are you asking about the broader fight for climate change? Because in this era where the federal government is really paralyzed because of Republican intransigence in Congress and the refusal of Senator Joe Manchin to support good climate change legislation, it's going to fall on local government to tackle this. And there's a lot we can do to make our buildings greener, to make our transportation network greener, to make our food system, our waste system greener. We can talk about those things, but while we're working on resiliency to protect the city from heat waves and flooding, we also every single day need to do more to slow climate change.
As you try to get more trees planted in lower income areas, on lower income blocks, are there particular impediments to that? I mean, I think Mayor Bloomberg had a big trees planting program. I can't remember whether it was Bloomberg or de Blasio had that 1 million trees from the Parks Department, but they both were into planting a lot of trees. And here we still are. I don't know how much has actually changed. Is it tough to actually get a lot of trees and change the feel of some of the blocks in East Harlem you were referring to or anywhere else?
Well, so the Bloomberg administration launched the first Million Trees initiative. They didn't hit the million mark until into the de Blasio administration. It was enormously successful, but it's a big city and there's still many neighborhoods that are underserved. And we've calculated that citywide, there's probably capacity to add 200,000, as much as 200,000 more street trees. It is more expensive to plant a tree on a city block than it would be to say in a park. It can be as much as $5,000 if you've got to dig a new tree pit. By the way, there are empty tree pits
for one tree,
neighborhoods.
Huh?
Yes.
$5,000.
Yes, often because of what's underground, and sometimes you need to move utilities. It's complicated in an urban environment, but I would argue that that's a bargain. And the health benefits, the mental health benefits, the resiliency benefits are significant. Tree pits now are often being built with what's called a bioswale underneath. And they are essentially cisterns which can collect hundreds or even thousands of gallons of water. So if you look at the flooding that we saw in Upper Manhattan and the Bronx yesterday, if we had more of that kind of green infrastructure to help absorb storm runoff, it would make us more resilient in the face of heavy rain events. So this can be done. It needs to be done. Our estimate for an 8-year plan to plant a million trees, Brian, is $500 million. That's capital eligible compared to the scale of the city budget, the scale of our capital budget over a period of 8 years. That is eminently doable. And in my opinion, absolutely a smart investment.
When you plant a tree on a city block, and I promise not to spend the whole 2 hours this morning talking about trees, although I could, but could, when you plant a tree, what do you plant on a city block? Like, you can't just install a, you know, a 50-foot shade tree, right? Is a little sprout that's going to go and grow into a tree that makes a difference in 20 years? Or what do you actually put on a block in New York City?
You're planting a sapling. The city has a nursery, and we sometimes contract with providers to bring in from other nurseries outside of the city. And we've learned a lot from the first Million Tree Initiative about what species of trees do better and what kind of conditions in the city. You want to vary the species on a block so that in the case of contagious disease among trees, it's less likely to spread. But you get benefits from day one and more each year. It doesn't take 20 years to start enjoying the shade and the cleaner air and the cooler climate from trees. But we got to start now. This is eminently doable. It's an equity issue. It's a health issue. And to me, it's an investment that we have to start making now.
And with Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine, you will take a caller from Brooklyn, won't you? You'll deign to do that. Paul in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC with the Manhattan Borough President. Hi, Paul.
Yeah, hi. I noticed no one has mentioned fans as a way to stay cool. I find it very effective, particularly ceiling fans. And in terms of, you know, getting stuff out to people who don't have money, it's cheaper than giving away air conditioners. I have an air conditioner I haven't turned on for 10 years.
Right. I mean, I personally have a ceiling fan in my bedroom and no AC. But, Borough President, I don't know if this is above our...
Paul is right. And in fact, the program I mentioned called HEAP, the Home Energy Assistance Project, gives you up to $800 to buy an air conditioner or a fan.
Uh-huh.
So, but unfortunately, that program has closed for the year because, as I mentioned, it's got limited budget. But that is an option for New Yorkers who want it.
I did see, and again, this might be over the scientific pay grade of either of us, but I did see on a TV weather forecast talking about this heat wave, their meteorologists say, fans won't cut it. You need to be in air conditioning for at least part of the day in these days where the heat index is going to be 100 degrees-ish. And that surprised me. I hadn't heard anybody say that before. I'm not saying he's right or I'm not saying he's wrong, but that was a credible meteorologist whose information I've taken many, many times saying, you know, fans won't cut it in this heat, not by themselves, without being in air conditioning some of the time. That was interesting to me. Do you have any information to the contrary?
I can't say I can confirm or not, but it sounds pretty credible to me. I mean, there's no doubt that air conditioning is the best solution for protecting people against adverse health effects. And that's why we open cooling centers and why we subsidize purchase of home air conditioning.
Lisa in South River, New Jersey, has something to say about this. Lisa, you're on WNYC with the Manhattan Borough President, Mark Levine. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Brian. All right, I have some tips. As regards to what the previous caller said, using fans, I love fans because they feel like you're in the Caribbean or something. And I mean, you can spritzer yourself, and keep the spray bottle in the refrigerator. I'm talking about, you know, things get really gritty, you know.
Water.
You can spritzer yourself, stand
cool,
in front of
cool
the...
Cool showers. That's another good thing. Yeah.
Yes. You can put cold packs in the freezer. But what I mentioned to your screener was that I use window tinting that you can get at Lowe's or Home Depot or wherever that cuts the UV rays. And they do come in different shades, so like the black, the smoke, the whatever. Then I used polarized screening, which cuts UV rays. And then when I open part of the window, I use one of those fold-out screens that has polarized screening.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that. I don't know if that's for, you know, I'm familiar with some of the window tinting to block the UV rays as a hedge against skin cancer. So if your window gets a lot of direct sunlight and you like the light, but you don't want to sit in the window and, you know, as if you were outside and you don't want to wear sunscreen in your living room, that's what that's for. Does it also help with the heat?
Totally. I rarely put on the air conditioner because my house is so cool due to the polarized screening, the polarized window tinting, and then if I open a window, I put in the fold-out polarized screens.
Right. Thank you very much. And I guess there are different kinds, not to go down this rabbit hole too much, that are tinted, as Lisa was saying, I guess for light, and other ones that are just for UV that can actually be clear but just block out the potentially cancer-causing rays.
Brian, can I say one thing on the spritzing front?
Yeah.
There's over 700 sprinklers in city parks, and they turn on any day. It's over 80 degrees. There's a really excellent map that you can find if you just Google Cool It NYC, and you can find all the sprinklers in your neighborhood. There's lots of other things you can look up on the map, including pools. But for little kids, it's a great option.
That's great. And again, listeners, on our Twitter feed just a few minutes ago, we tweeted out the New York City map to the cooling centers. There's so many of them in the five boroughs. There's going to be one in your neighborhood if you want a cooling center. Go to that map. Just go to our Twitter feed. You'll see that map. And also, we tweeted out the map to all the New York City public swimming pools. So if that helps anybody, it's out there. Changing topics, let's talk about monkeypox. The feds are giving New York tens of thousands of doses now, but you've said the city's real need is closer to 100,000 doses. Where does that number come from?
Well, Brian, I just have to say how frustrated I am that almost 2 years after dealing with this exact same challenge on COVID vaccination, we are once again in a shortage situation, and also shortage of test capacity and treatment capacity, which maybe we can talk about. And I'm also really upset that New York City has not been getting its fair share of monkeypox vaccine doses. We are now registering 30% or more of the monkeypox cases daily in the United States, yet we've been getting about 10% of the supply. And that's why there's just been this crush of demand for vaccine appointments, which we're unable to meet. Last week on Friday evening, 9,200 appointments went live and they were gone within a matter of minutes as an indication of demand. The 100,000 estimate is based on the fact that right now this is overwhelmingly impacting gay, bisexual, and men who have sex with men, and that if you look at the number of people who might qualify for PEP or PrEP, that's where the 100,000 estimate comes from. So we're still very far off from meeting that need. And there is good news.
That's an HIV-related reference,
yes,
the PrEP,
yes,
right?
Exactly. People who are at risk based on sexual activity. We are getting a large shipment, I believe, later this week. I think it's over 20,000 doses were expected later this week. We don't have confirmed yet when the appointments will go live. So that's a big step in the right direction. But in the meantime, we still face a severe shortage, and it's really unacceptable.
You have an idea, I see, for a monkeypox vaccine waiting list, partly as an equity measure. Explain your waiting list idea.
Well, the current system requires you to know when appointments will open and then go to the appointment website and hit refresh, and you're essentially competing with thousands of other people in hopes that you can grab an appointment. Someone who doesn't have computer access or reliable internet, or maybe is working long hours or just didn't know they needed to go to the website at that time, is going to be blocked out. And we have seen certainly anecdotal evidence of inequality in who's getting vaccinated what appears to be underrepresentation of gay men of color and who's getting vaccinated. And that's also really unacceptable. And yet again, a repeat of some of the mistakes we made in dealing with COVID. A better system is allow people anytime day or night to add their name to a pre-registration list. And then the city can use that list, first of all, to ensure there's allocations evenly, say, by zip code, so that people from Black and brown communities are not underrepresented. And then as appointments open up, use a lottery system to inform people that it's their turn and they can sign up. This is being done in some other parts of the country. Washington, D.C. Health Department started it over a week ago. And it's a more efficient, I think, fair and probably less frustrating, but also more equitable system.
There's also a need versus stigma issue emerging with monkeypox, and I'd like you to comment on it. The spread, as you said, is largely in the gay male community, so we want resources to be targeted there where they're needed. But this is also not some disease of being gay, right? And advocates keep having to remind everyone there is nothing about the biology of any LGBTQ people that makes them monkeypox carriers. So how do you see the reason for the current concentrations of the virus? And how do you see the risk of discrimination and stigmatization, and how the anti-LGBTQ wave in American politics might use this like they once used AIDS and HIV?
Well, it is both true that this is a disease which anybody can catch and anybody can spread, and that it can be spread outside of sexual contact through other intimate, usually skin-to-skin contact, sometimes between a medical provider and a patient, for example, or between people who live together. It is also true that in this current outbreak, virtually every case that we know of is occurring amongst men who have sex with men. And so we do have to be honest about who's facing the greatest risk. And yes, doing without stigma and doing it without obscuring the fact that this disease can spread in other communities, and is to a minimal degree. There have been some women diagnosed, I don't believe in New York City yet, but nationally and in Europe. And in theory, children could get it as well, although I don't believe there's any diagnosis yet in the US among children. So I think it's about the right balance of being clear about what the science says. This can spread broadly, but also alerting the LGBTQ community that the risk right now is elevated in that segment.
We certainly know that HIV became much broader than that, even though that's the community it was first discovered in. So there's that risk to keep in mind and that context to keep in mind. And we leave it there with Manhattan Borough President Mark Levine. We always appreciate when you come on. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Brian.